yourself together. Transcend your suffering. See if you can be some kind of hero. Make the suffering in the world less. Well, that's the way forward, as far as I can tell, if there is any way forward.
When I was 25 or so, I probably weighed about 138 pounds. I smoked like a pack of cigarettes a day. I drank tremendous amount of alcohol. I was from Northern Alberta, this rough little town up in Northern Alberta called Fairview. And, you know, there were long winters there, and my friends were heavy drinkers, and most of them dropped out of school by the time they were 15 or 16, went off to work on the oil rigs. And, you know, it was a rough town, and we drank a lot. I started when I was 14, and, you know, and so I had a lot of bad habits, let's say, and and I wasn't in great shape physically, and I was also still intellectually obsessed by, as I am now. And so that would have been in 85. But I decided around then, about 85, 84, something like that, maybe a little earlier, that I was really going to try to get my act together. And so I started doing that. I quit smoking. Well, that took a long time, because I eventually had to quit drinking too in order to quit smoking. And I started working out, started playing sports, which I'd never done. I was a small kid. I'd been skipped a grade, and I was small for my age, so sports were never, especially team sports, were never really a domain of expertise for me. Although I skied and went trapping with my dad, went, you know, cross-country skiing and camping and all that. But when I went to graduate school, I started swimming. The first physical exercise routine I did, I enrolled in a swimsercise course, I think it was called. So it was me and this like really overweight kid, and like these 60-year-old women and men, they could out-exercise me like mad. It was really embarrassing, me and the overweight kid. You know, we'd be just panting ourselves three quarters to death at the end of the bloody workout, and these 60-year-old women who weren't in great shape were like, you know, chatting away as if nothing was going on at all in the pool. So that was quite embarrassing, and as was going to the weight room, you know, because when I started, I could barely bench press 75 pounds, and people used to keep coming over and helping me, which was the last thing I bloody well wanted, but certainly needed. And I got to the point where I could bench press 225 pounds. I think that was the best I did, and I gained about 30 pounds of muscle in a year and a half. So that was a good thing. So, like, I was kind of a wild man, and, you know, I'm a little bit manic in my temperament, and so, you know, I was kind of going every direction at the same time. So, and, you know, I don't regret that. I had a fine time when I was a kid, but I needed really to get disciplined. And I had to do it because I was working on these hard problems that, you know, that I've been discussing with all of you, and I've been working on them really, you know, obsessively since I was probably about 18, maybe even earlier than that. And got to the point around 25 when I was in graduate school trying to get my PhD, so doing all my research. Like, I published 15 papers by the time I graduated with my PhD, which was by a fairly large measure the most papers that any graduate student at that time had ever published at McGill. I think that's right. It might have been twice as many, or maybe twice as many, maybe even three times as many. And at the same time, I wrote Maps of Meaning, which was a terrible, terrible, terribly difficult thing to do, because I was writing about 3 hours a day doing that, and I couldn't do all that and continue with my misbehavior, you know, my massive hedonistic consumption of alcohol and all of that. I just couldn't keep it up and also work seriously on the issues that were at hand. So, you know, I had to stop. That's a sacrifice. I had to stop messing about and straighten myself out. And I got married. Well, the woman who's my wife, Tammy, who I've known since she was 8 years old, she lived across the street from me in this little town called Fairview. And I was in love with her like the first time I saw her, which is quite the bloody thing. So that's worked out pretty well for me. But she came to live with me about the same time. And, you know, we decided jointly to get our act together. And we swore that we'd tell each other the truth, which I think she's actually done better than me. Like, I don't think she's lied to me ever in our entire marriage, which is unbelievable, you know. And it's been so useful, because I can really tell her things and we can really talk. So I tell you, if you want to have a good relationship, man, you embed it in the truth, because if you don't embed it in the truth, you don't have a relationship. It's just lies. It's a tissue of lies, and it will dissolve in the chaos as soon as a crisis comes along. So the truth is a terrible thing, but not compared to falsehood. So
Any advice for students here?
Yeah, read great books.
Mm-hmm.
Really, man? You've got this four-year period that has been carved out of your lives by society. It's given you an identity, like a high-quality identity, and freedom at the same time. And you're not going to get that again in your life. You've got a respectable identity, university student, and complete freedom associated with that, or as near as you're ever going to get. And you've got these unbelievable libraries that are full of the writings of people mm-hmm. who are intelligent and articulate beyond comprehension. And, you know, and you can go there and you can learn all this. And you might think, well, why should you learn it? You learn it to get a job, or you learn it to get good grades, or you learn it to get a degree. And that's all nonsense. It's nonsense. The reason that you come to university to be educated is because there is nothing more powerful than someone who is articulate and who can think and speak. It's power. And I mean power of the best sort. It's authority and influence and respectability and competence. And so you come to university to craft your highest skill. And your highest skill is to be found in articulated speech. And if you're a master at formulating your arguments, you win everything. And better than that, when you win everything, everyone around you wins too. Because to transform yourself into, let's consider your transformation to something approximating the logos, it means you shine a light on the whole world. Well, there's nothing more exciting to do than that. There's nothing better you can possibly do. And to think that you're coming to university to be, you know, trained to have a job, it's like, great, that's a hell of a lot better than being unemployed and covered with Cheeto dust while you're snacking away in front of your video game in the basement. But it's not a, and I don't have anything against video games, by the way, but it's hardly a triumphant call to being in the world. And that's what university should be calling forth. It's like, God, you people, I know what Harvard students are like. I taught here for 5 years. You people are spectacular. You're spectacular. You're all capable of being world beaters. You transform yourself into something that's articulated and sensible and grounded in history and knowledgeable and wise, man. You can do anything you want, and hopefully anything you want for good. Because if you have any sense, everything you want to do would be for the good, because there's nothing more compelling or meaningful or useful in combating the tragedy of life than to struggle with all your soul on behalf of the good. And the universities have forgotten that. It's why everyone's bailing out of the humanities, and they should. The humanities are corrupt. And they're corrupt because they're not telling students this. It's so bloody obvious. It's like, learn to think, learn to speak, learn to read. It makes you a superpower, an individual superpower. You have and I don't understand why that isn't just told to students. It's not that hard to understand, and everyone wants to hear it. It's like, really? I could do that? I could do that? It's like, yeah, really, you could do that. And the whole society around you has labored for really thousands of years to provide every single one of you with this spectacular opportunity that you have while you're undergraduates and graduate students here, mm-hmm. man. Everyone's just praying that you would come here and manifest everything that you could manifest. And that's what you should be doing, instead of waving placards and complaining about how you're oppressed, for God's sake. You see these Yale students complaining about their oppression. It just leaves me aghast. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, we're against the ruling class. It's like, no, 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 you're baby ruling class members. You're young. The only reason you're not rich is because you're young. You know, that's the best, really, if you look at the 1% even, the dreaded 1%, you know, most of those people are old. Why? Well, when you progress through life, if you're reasonably successful, you trade in your promising youth for your wealthy old age, but you're still bloody old. Would you trade it? Would you trade your youth for that? Like, if you factor age out of the economic equation, things look a lot different. Well, of course older people have more money. If they have any sense, they've been collecting it for their whole life. Is that somehow unfair? It's not unfair unless you want to be poverty-stricken when you're 70. And you don't want to be poverty-stricken when you're 70. So I just don't understand what's happened to the universities. I can't believe that you're not told when you come the first day, look, man, you're here on a heroic mission. You're going to take your capacity to articulate yourself to levels that are undreamed of. You're going to come out of here unstoppable. You're going to be able to do anything you want. It's like, that's what you're here for. Instead, you're taught that well, you know, the world's a pretty oppressive place, and you're probably the bottom of the victim pile, and there's virtually nothing you can do about it except, you know, deconstruct the patriarchy. And it's so weak need and so pathetic that universities should be embarrassed that that's what they're peddling to students. I'm embarrassed by it. You know, I've gone on public record telling parents, bloody well send your boys to trade school because at least they'll learn something useful. And that's a terrible thing for someone like me to say, because I do believe that that being articulated and educated in the highest possible manner is, there's nothing that's better for you and for society. And why have the universities forgotten this? Well, that's postmodern neo-Marxism for you, you know, and the philosophy of intense resentment and oppression and group identity, and God, it's just pathetic.